Today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online is an encore presentation and a classic episode from way back in the day, or at least a couple of years ago. Brand new EPP episodes out right now at ghostpodcast.com.
Hi, it's Tony and Jenny Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online. Every week, we work hard at giving you the best real ghost stories we can find for free through the podcast. But producing and maintaining the show isn't so free for us.
And that's why we're asking for your support.
If you like the show, please become an EPP. That's an extra podcast person through the button at realghoststoriesonline.com. As an EPP, you'll get an additional bonus exclusive episode of the show to enjoy every weekend. Plus, you'll have access to our exclusive EPP video content and backlog of exclusive EPP bonus episodes as well.
It's only $5 a month for all these extras.
And your support helps to keep our daily free version of the show alive and on the air.
Become an EPP now at realghoststoriesonline.com.
Please and thank you.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Today, after losing her family tragically, one woman loses her mind and is committed, but her legend lives on long after she escaped from the institution. A listener chalks up her experience in her family's home to her active imagination, but her mother confirms there was something sinister in the bathroom. Those stories, your calls, and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I think we're passing this cold back and forth.
It's kind of like Pong of colds.
Yeah, it is.
It's just nonstop. Although you can't get the same cold twice, right?
I don't know.
I believe it can't go back and forth. That's why once it's in your home, you can't like reinfect yourself with it. Unless it's physically, genetically morphed itself in one of us into a different version of the cold, then it can go back. Although I don't believe that that's really, I don't think it happens like that quickly. Could be wrong.
I'm just going to go with I feel like crap and leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, you sound better today.
Yeah.
And I thought, honestly, this morning when I got up and was recording some commercials at 8-something, that I was like, I don't know if we're going to be able to do a show today.
Really?
I really thought that I was not going to get any better. It was horrible. It was like trying to do a 30-second commercial, which, by the way, was for a Christmas haunted house. Which in itself is a wonderful concept, keeping the spirit alive. I thought that my voice was just going to be shot, and I tried to talk to some folks too, and I was like, eh. But I've been drinking this tea all day, and I've had about 15 glasses of it now.
I wonder if it's really the tea or just the amount of fluids.
I think it's the fluids, and I think the tea does help a bit, but the warm fluids. I've been staying away from cold water because the cold water is not good for a throat when you're trying to talk.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the fluids are, but I've had constant warmth on my throat throughout the day, so hopefully that's been helping.
We will see.
So, yeah, hopefully I actually feel pretty decent right now.
Good.
So we'll see if this... progresses for the next 55 minutes. 855-853-4802 is a phone number to call into Real Ghost Stories Online. If you've not done so yet, please press subscribe to our show, whatever platform it is you're listening on. And do remember to share with your friends. Let a friend know about us. That's what helps us grow, is with your support. So press share, press subscribe, let somebody know about the show, and to help us get more ghost stories in here and make it a better show for you. 855-853-4802 to the phone number again. Let's kick off the show here with a caller. Hi.
Hey, Tony and Jen. It is MTR, also known as Matt the Rat again. Just wanted to call back. Thanks for airing my story. Really appreciate it. I do have a story for you, but just to recap, there's a lot of things that do happen if you think about it at theme parks. So many emotions, like you guys said, even like a tenth of that, because there's thousands of people, it's so easy to feed off of. If we're going to face ghosts, can feed off of energy and whatnot. I personally had to clean up. That's a little clue to what I've had to do at my job. I was custodial. I had to clean up somebody's ashes because people sprinkle them on the ride for X or Y reason, maybe their kid's favorite ride or whatever. But back into my, get into my story, actually. I was cleaning in the restroom. It was closing time. I was alone. And there are six urinals on my right-hand side, then six toilets, and it leads all the way to the back. On my left-hand side, there are about four sinks, then the baby changing table, then the back closet where all the supplies are. Well, I get into my closing round. I'm cleaning everything up, and I have, one of the urinals goes off on their own. I don't know why. Not in front of it. Not by it. Just goes off. Sensors are supposed to indicate some sort of thing being directly in front of it and setting it off. So I think nothing of it. I continue cleaning. And then a toilet goes off. I'm not walking by the toilets. Toilets are, generally speaking, closed, all the doors. There's really no reason for them to be open, nor am I walking by it. So those go off. Well, one. And then another urinal. And it gets to the point where I can just feel something there, but I just don't know what. So I announce out loud, hey, you know, whatever you are, I'm just here to clean. Get out of here. I'm not trying to give you any problems. The toilet goes off. And at that point, I'm like, whatever this is, it's messing with me. People try to convince me it's batteries in it. Maybe maintenance was working on it. Either way, all of them would not go off sporadically, and it wasn't the same toilets. It was just random urinals and toilets. So finally, I got very frustrated, and I yell out loud, would you knock it off? Two urinals and two toilets spontaneously went off at the same time. At that point, I literally was like, screw this. Ran into the closet, and I said out loud, it's okay. I'm safe here. Right when I say that, the lights go out inside of the closet. I get freaked out. I grab my stuff. I run out. Luckily, I run into two coworkers, and they look at me and go, looks like you just saw a ghost. I'm extremely pissed off. I went to headquarters. I told them, dude, never put me in that restroom again. The clothes, I don't care. Just never let me go in there again. And about 4 to 6 months later, I end up having to close that restroom. I see one of my coworkers walking by, and I'm like, hey, dude, can you please go in there? Just stay with me. I need you there. I'm really not comfortable. And he's making fun of me. Like, is that the restroom you're scared of? I'm like, yes, dude, just please come with me. So we're doing our thing. I'm doing my thing. I'm cleaning. He's, you know, just hanging out with me just to keep me company. And right when I'm done, he's like, dude, there was nothing in here. Like, this is so stupid. Immediately when he says that, the urinal goes off on his own. His eyes get big, and I look at him and I'm like, yeah, dude, I told you so. So there's one of my few other stories. I have a couple more at that theme park, as well as some that have just happened throughout my life. Thanks, you guys. Really appreciate it. And I can't wait to join the EPP. I hope I said that right. Have a good one, you guys.
Okay, so when he's in the closet and he says, okay, I'm safe here. And the light goes out. That's so funny to me. I'm sorry.
Ghost urinals.
That would be terrifying. That really would. It's a funny story just because the word urinals in it, but it's really funny.
It'd be better
and
if it could
scary.
Have used the word urinal cake at some point too in urinal the story. Cake. And then the urinal cake started flying like discs and frisbees at everyone.
Or the ghost smelled like a urinal cake.
Oh God. You know, that's one of those things too where if I'm at a candle store or something, I feel there's a lot of candles that do smell as a urinal cake, and they really do. I mean, there's plenty of great smelling candles, but there's a lot of candles that are overly perfumey, and I'll just flat out say, you know, especially if like a sales clerk comes up to me, I like the Yankee Candle or something. Like, oh, do you like the smell of that one, sir? It's kind of urinal cakey.
Don't do that. Oh man.
Oh, there were so many. I mean, and honestly, it's rare. I mean, you wouldn't know this. You don't go into men's restrooms.
No,
but
I honestly don't know what that would smell like.
It's just an overly perfumed urinal cake. And they're not so much used anymore, at least in the restrooms I'm frequenting in public. They used to be like everywhere in the 80s. I think it was like the thing. It was like, oh, urinal cakes. It was like, make it smell fresh. I think now restrooms just kind of have those, you know, spritzers into the air that automatically go off to kind of freak you out every once in a while.
Okay.
But urinal cakes, I think, used to be the spritzer of the activated by your urine.
It's like stick it to them with stick ups.
Literally, urine activated. Urine activated perfume discs is what they are. But the smell of urinal cakes brings back the memory of restrooms in churches.
Okay.
For whatever reason, it seems like every church restroom I ever went into as a kid, it was like very cold and also just smelled of urinal cakes. I'm trying to think what else. It seemed like a lot of like festival type things had the smell of urinal cakes at them.
Yeah.
But it's a very distinct smell. And all the guys out there who had grown up through the 80s and most of the 90s know exactly what I'm talking about. If you are a little bit younger than that, you may not necessarily have as much experience with the wonderful scent that is a urinal cake. I don't know how we got on that topic. But that was a freaky story. And the thing is, plenty of restrooms, you know, one thing goes off here and there because those sensors are pretty well screwed. But when they're going off reactionary to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Then you know there's something going on.
Well, and you have plumbing and electrical malfunctioning.
Yeah. I love hearing stories of the haunted theme parks.
Yeah.
I would love to, if there's more people out there who have haunted theme park stories. I was watching some YouTube videos over the weekend of Adam the Woo, I believe.
Yeah.
And he's just a dude who goes around and kind of just explores, you know, shut down, bizarre, you know, remnants of urban life. And there's somewhere he's going into abandoned theme parks. He went into one here in our city, Joyland, which is something straight out of a Stephen King movie. And that's just decrepit and falling apart. But he also went into one, River Country.
Down at Disney.
In Disney,
okay.
Yeah, which is creepy, too, because that's the original water park for Disney. I remember looking at like brochures and stuff for that as a kid.
Uh-huh.
And when we went down there, we never went to River Country, but it was one of the options, and we elected not to go. We just went to like Epcot and Disney World and MGM and stuff that time. We never went to River Country.
Okay.
But I remember looking and going, that'd be really neat. And all I have is just these memories of these pictures of this really pristine, cool water park. And now it's abandoned, still sitting there. It's a Disney's abandoned park, and he goes through this thing with his camera, and there's still music playing in there, and it's all rotting away. It's kind of bizarre.
Now, the price he paid for that little bit of entertainment was he's kicked out of all Disney properties for life.
Well, it wasn't just that. I mean, he's gone to other parks and trying to go into other areas that have been shut down or mm-hmm. abandoned. It's like a second floor of something at Epcot. I forgot which one, but it was something, and I remember seeing it in the 80s, early 90s. It was kind of like a futuristic area, and they've now used that pavilion for something completely different, but the second floor is still sitting as it was in the late 80s, just not used.
Uh-huh.
But like the fixtures are all still there and everything, so he's trying to go up there and like get video of this, which is really cool because I'm into that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But he's gotten caught a couple times, and eventually he was kicked out of Disney parks. So, yeah, not advisable to do, but interesting nonetheless. And he goes to other places, too. But anyhow, not an advertising plug or anything. But if you're into the abandoned stuff, check out the Adam the Woo videos on
they're pretty
on
funny.
Yeah, he's funny. And it's really just urban exploration, creepy, interesting. So something I think our audience probably would get into. 855-853-4802. That's our phone number again here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go to one more call before we go into one of these stories here today, mainly because I need to take a sip of some of this tea in order to read a story.
So, and it's a long story.
So, yeah, so give me let's do like a two-minute call here. Hi.
Hello, how's it going, Tony? Jenny, how are y'all doing today? This is Bo all the way from Waco, Texas. Now, I've been listening to the podcast for a little while, you know, and I listen to it in the morning. I get up about 4 in the morning and go to work, so get to watch or get to listen to a couple of episodes while I'm working, which is always nice and kind of freaky because you sit when it's dark outside, you kind of start to see things go out of the corner of your eye, which is kind of fun, hearing the ghost stories and everything. But I had a strange occurrence happen to me a couple of days ago. I was sleeping and I was having a weird dream, and I woke up and I couldn't move. Now I hear like sleep paralysis and everything like that, and people are like, it's like an elephant on your chest, which makes it seem like it's super hot, really heavy and everything like that. But no, my it was weird because my body felt like a rock, like stone, like it, not like I couldn't move. But when I woke up, I didn't like freak out or anything like that. Like a lot of people, they say whenever like sleep paralysis or like that, they freak out. I was really calm and relaxed. But it was weird that like my body was just so heavy. And so I kind of just said the Lord's Prayer a few times, and like, and I felt it like as if it was a circle, like coming closer to my core, like my arms and legs started to feel like lighter and everything like that. And all of a sudden it just kind of like down to the center of my stomach, and I was like fully mobile again, which I don't know if that's really like, if that's the thing with sleep paralysis or anything like that, but you know, it was kind of weird and kind of creepy and everything like that. And so there's that, but I will be calling in a little bit later on. I get to tell you my fun story or my battle that I got to have with tarot cards, which I guess we could always do part of a Ouija awareness or Tarot Card Tuesday or something like that. But I'll call back with that kind of creepier story and a few other stories that I have. So y'all have a wonderful day, and thanks for the podcast. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling in and sharing your story. You know, I would say of all the stories that I've heard of sleep paralysis, that one described the experience I had about as close to as any of them.
Really?
Where it was, I didn't feel pressure. I felt like it was a rock. Like I was a rock.
Oh.
Couldn't move. It wasn't like something was sitting on me. And he kind of expressed that like it felt like something was moving closer to him, to his core, as he described it. And I always just described it as kind of like this cloud that was moving slowly through me, mm-hmm. which I think is essentially the same thing. He just kind of described it in a very different way. Yeah, very, it's creepy as hell.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. You know, I still have questions about, you know, I'd like to just think it was sleep paralysis because I didn't see anything. But, you know, it's such a weird experience, you know, it wasn't a stationary feeling. You know, I didn't feel like I was moving, but whatever the hell was going on felt like it was moving.
Okay.
And when I think of sleep paralysis, I'm thinking of just stationary. Can't move. Something's on me. But this was not that. This was, it was like moving through me. And that kind of sounds like what he had to, so I don't know. I'm just glad I didn't like pop out of it and then start spewing pea soup or something everywhere. That was what was going through my mind. And I too was like saying the Lord's Prayer as it was going on. So I was freaking out.
Yeah.
In my head. And you know, I thought, oh, great, I'm going to be possessed now. And, you know, going to see me on the news tomorrow.
Not any weirder than you were before.
Mm-mm. Not at all. Made for a great story. Ryan the Skeptic writes in, and Ryan's on our message board every now and then, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he calls in sometimes,
sure,
too.
And this is the legend of Hannah McGonnell. This is a local legend, he said, that was imparted to him by the director of a camp that he attended as a teenager, Wilderness Camp, located near Lawson, Missouri. The story begins during the Great Ice Storm of 1924, which left an ice layer 6 inches thick across a third of the state.
And that's not even an exaggeration. I looked it up.
My God.
Can you imagine that?
That would, like, take out all infrastructure at this point.
They said, like, a total of 3,000 telephone poles were completely, like, split in, you know, like, a 40-mile radius.
Can you imagine today with so much more electricity and so much more infrastructure that relies on that?
I've seen a half inch of ice shut this city down for 10 days.
That would be like, it would take it out for like a month.
Mm-hmm.
It would take it out for a month. Continuing on. And it took another 3 weeks for the ice sheet to completely melt. Deep in the forested area, northeast of Lawson, stood McGonnell Cabin, where Hannah, her daughter, and her husband resided. Her husband and daughter's names have been lost to time. As the ice began to fall on December 16th, Hannah's husband had not yet returned to the cabin, which came as no surprise, being that he'd weathered storms in the town before. The trail through the woods could be dangerous during winter weather. Hannah thought nothing of it, focusing her time on keeping the fire going inside the cabin and keeping a pot of tea warm for her and her daughter. 48 hours passed, and still he hadn't returned. To make matters worse, the daughter took ill, having developed a cough, chills, and a fever. As the girl's condition worsened, Hannah became more worried. Desperation began to creep in, and on the morning of the third day, she struck out towards town in hopes of returning with her husband and the town doctor. The journey to town took 8 hours due to the winter conditions. She first stopped at the Lawson Tavern, a bar with a few rooms for rent on its second floor. Hannah learned that her husband had not chosen to stay there, as she'd presumed. He'd instead had dinner there and braved a storm in an effort to get home. Now frantic, she convinced her local doctor to brave the ice and return with her to the cabin. Night had already fallen when they finally arrived to find Hannah's daughter, her condition severely deteriorated, coughing and shiveringly violently in the one bedroom of the cabin. Immediately, the doctor gave her a mixture of medicine and tea and piled more blankets on top of her to keep her warm. He then gave Hannah a different mixture of medicine and hot tea to help her sleep, and she curled up in the chair next to the bed and nodded off. The doctor awoke to the sound of singing with an eerie cadence. "She will leave you and then come back again. A pretty girl is just like a pretty tune." Entering the bedroom, he witnessed oddly calm and collected Hannah pouring sips of tea into her daughter's mouth and gently stroking her hair. Her daughter, however, was motionless and didn't appear to be breathing. Stepping closer, the doctor could see her blue lips and pasty white skin. The girl's eyes were glassy, fixed, and unmoving. In the night, the young girl had apparently passed away. As he stood there, stunned, Hannah turned to him, saying, "It's all right, doctor. She's getting better by the minute. Give my regards to your wife when you get back to town, will you?" "I'll do that, missus," he responded politely, tipping his hat, though inwardly he was filled with fear at the sight of the mad woman. When he returned to town, he reported the girl's death to the authorities and Hannah's breakdown to the administrators at St. Joseph's State Hospital, where she was forcefully committed for her own good, from which she later escaped in the early 1950s. Following her escape, there were reports of strange thefts in northwestern Missouri, where people would return home to find food and women's clothing missing, among other things. True valuables like jewelry and appliances were never taken, leading to bewilderment on the part of the local police. Hannah's story would have ended here if not for the 1980 construction of a camp and retreat in the forest northeast of Lawson, Missouri. Wilderness Camp and Retreat. The first week of summer that year, a full group of campers and counselors was holed up inside the lodge, spending time singing and listening to a sermon by the camp leader during a pounding thunderstorm. As night fell, the different groups of campers were escorted to their respective rooms to turn in for the night. A young girl from the northern side of the lodge woke up in the night, needing to use the bathroom. Sipping from the top bunk to the floor as quietly as possible, she jumped at a loud and brick crack of thunder and lightning. Just as she composed herself, another crack of thunder boomed and filled the room with a brief flash of light from the lightning outside. Gasping with fright, the girl noticed a silhouette in the flash. Something was standing at the window outside. She ducked to the floor and crept around to the front of the bunk bed, and peeking out from behind a post, she saw a figure outside. Standing at the window was an old woman with a wrinkled, hard face and dark eyes. Long, straight white hair hung string-like from her head. Her shoulders were covered with a torn patch and a worked cloak. It was drenched and hung heavy from the pouring rain. Neither her thin body nor her craggly face betrayed any hint of emotion as she gazed into the window. Seeing the girl's movement, the old woman pressed an old, gnarled palm against the glass and moved closer, squinting for a better look. The girl screamed, waking the camp and raising the alarm, but after another peal of lightning lit up the room, she saw that the woman was gone. The camp director contacted the local police, who investigated and searched the grounds but found nothing, save the muddy remnants of a palm print on the window. They took a photo of it and filed it away, case closed. Later that another young girl asked her counselor if she could head back down to the lake, where she'd inadvertently left her swimming goggles. They radioed the camp staff and tended to the lake, but they'd already returned to the lodge following the campers swimming there. Reluctantly, she gave the camper permission to go retrieve them, instructing her to make it as quick as possible. As the girl walked down the gravel road towards the lake, she heard rustling in the woods to her left. Though it startled her, the sound was further off and she couldn't see anything through the brush, so she thought nothing of it. It's probably just a rabbit or a squirrel, she surmised. She continued to walk down to the beach and found her goggles were where she'd left them, putting them in her knapsack and turning back up the gravel road. When she made it halfway back to the lodge, she heard the rustling noise again. It was closer now. Again, her better judgment, she stepped closer to the woods and tried to peer through the leaves, through the trees. What she saw frightened her. Standing there was a woman with white hair. She wore a brown shift that appeared to be made of patches and pieces of fabric. The hard lines of her face betrayed no expression, but her dark eyes watched the female camper closely, following the girl's movement as she backed away towards the middle of the road, her hands up in surrender. Despite her age, her arms were lined with taut muscle, and the camper was filled with terror at the sight. The woman looked terrifying. She turned and ran all the way back to the lodge, alerting the camp director, who again called the police. Again, they found nothing. They wrote the incident off as a figment of a superstitious girl's imagination. But now the existence of the white-haired woman was becoming well-known among the different camps that convened at the campground that summer. Hannah's last appearance would prove to be her most traumatic. It occurred in December of 1981 in a very snowy night, during a week when a Kansas City church had rented out the campground for a Christmas retreat. After the campers and staff had all retired to bed for the night, a young woman slipped into the restroom to retrieve her coat, boots, gloves, and winter hat, which she'd hidden in the shower behind a curtain. Fully clothed for the cold, she opened the sliding glass door at the back of the assembly area and slipped out onto the porch where she'd wait for her boyfriend to meet her. Together, they planned to slip out to one of the counselor's cars for a late-night rendezvous. This didn't go as planned. 20 minutes late, thanks to a counselor who slept lightly, her boyfriend slipped out into the same porch, finding a set of footprints leading to the steps downward to the lower section of the porch. What he found filled him with alarm, as the signs left in the snow showed that someone had slipped and fell down the 30 steps leading to the lower porch. A succession of blood spots showed that they'd also been injured in some manner. One set of footprints led away from the scene of the accident and oddly into the forest. The search party returned to the lodge to put on heavier coats and retrieve their flashlights. They began to follow the trail. The footprints led them ever deeper into the forest, past the boundaries of the campgrounds and into a portion of the forest that with which none of them were familiar. Ultimately, they came upon a dilapidated cabin. Giving each other uncertain looks, they drew straws to decide who would enter first. They crept up to the cabin, working the ancient, rusted latch onto the front door and easing it open slowly and quietly. One by one, the counselors entered, shining their flashlights around the junk-filled room. The remnants of a fire glowed low in the fireplace. Apart from that, the room was littered with random objects, most of them looking very old and rotten. They noticed the opening to the bedroom. A step closer. Inside, they found the girl lying on a pallet of clothes and covered with a tattered old quilt. A warm cup of tea sat on the wood crate next to her, and not a towel rested on her head. After she'd been taken back to the camp and tended to, the young girl asked them where the white-haired woman had gone. While waiting in the snow, she'd taken a fall and hit her head, dazed. She remembered the white-haired woman gently soaking her hair and singing to her as she carried her through the forest, then falling into a comfortable sleep in the dark of the cabin. She wasn't sure if she'd been dreaming or not until she awoke in the lodge. In the years that followed, Hannah's absence has raised a few questions among campers and the locals in Lawson. After the roaming in the area for so many years, her abrupt disappearance is troubling. Did she injure herself and become prey for coyotes or some other local animal? Did she decide to move on? Perhaps she, in trying to find her lost daughter, did finally some strange sense of closure, or find some strange sense of closure when she pulled that quilt over the injured camper. It's likely we'll never know for sure. Hannah, if she still lives, will be over a century old and certainly in no shape to cope with a rough life in the wild. However, as of the late 90s, campers still occasionally left plates of food out for her on the porch of the Wilderness Camp Lodge, and occasionally would return to find the plate empty. So, who knows?
I think that was one of the most well-written stories we've had.
So, any backstory on this story?
Not that I could find out about her specifically.
Okay.
I just researched, and yeah, there was that horrific ice storm, and that area, we passed by there going up to see your parents. It's right off of I-35. I know you see Excelsior Springs mm-hmm. when we go up there.
Does a camp exist?
I'm sure it does.
Okay.
I didn't specifically fact check that, sure. But
That would be, I mean, it is truly an urban legend tale, and one very well written and very spooky tale. But I would love to hear how true it is. And I imagine that there probably is quite a bit of nuggets of reality in that story.
And it's got to have some roots somewhere.
Yeah, I would love to hear, you know, if any of our listeners are familiar with the campsite, if they have any experiences themselves, or if this is, you know, and I'm guessing it's probably a tale that's been told multiple times over, if there's any variations in it. But it's one of those really good urban legends. But but let's get to the core of it and see, you know, just how much of a, you know, legend is it and how much of a true story is it? Because I think there's probably quite a bit of true story to it.
Yeah.
I would just love to hear, try and figure out what those pieces are. That's what I love about urban legends is there's, you know, some of them are complete BS, but a lot of times there's some candidates of truth to all of them.
Well, and I think beyond the urban legend, you know, the girl that was supposedly found in the cabin.
Sure.
There's no way an elderly woman that old could have carried her.
No, no. I'd love to hear what, if that happened, if that's part of the stories that have been added to this, you know, there's something that happened there, obviously.
That's where I thought the paranormal part
could be at play. Yeah, it's all paranormal. Yeah, I think it's a great story. So if anyone has anything to add to that or can share more about that story, feel free to chime in on the message boards on our website at realghoststoriesonline.com. Let's go to a caller.
Good morning, Brewskies. This is Lynn from Central Ohio again. And this morning, I have a couple of stories that I kind of lump into my special moment stories. These are stories that I have between myself and my cousin, as well as ourselves, for when we've lost a special person in our lives, that we just kind of wait for that special moment to happen. And I know that I had called in, I think it was last week, with a story about when my father passed away, how an angel assisted me in just being able to afford to buy the clothing to attend my father's showings and his funeral. So now I'm going to kind of move it up a little bit. My father passed away very unexpectedly, May 9th of 2008. And many years ago, when I was 10, he bought a funeral home. Now, if you remember right, I've told you in a few previous stories, actually, that both my father and my youngest brother are funeral directors. My father was, and my youngest brother is. So my father had worked in the funeral home that he bought ever since I can remember. I mean, I was born in the house next door to it because he was an employee there and grew up next door to the funeral home, running around the funeral home. And then at the age of 10, he bought the funeral home. And there was an apartment above the funeral home, so our family moved into that apartment. When I say apartment, it was the size of a pretty large house. It was a big apartment. So they moved into it when I was 10, when there was three of us kids at that time, ages 10, 7, and 2 or 3 months for my youngest brother. So when we moved into the funeral home, there was a regulator clock, probably around 50 years old at that time, that hung in the embalming room. And my dad had just loved this clock. It was a nice wall clock, but kind of styled along the lines of a grandfather clock with the nice big pendulums in it. And, you know, it's a wind-up clock. And it was just a very, very ornate clock. And he had told my mom that when we bought the funeral home and we got moved in and settled, he was taking that clock and having it redone and resurfaced and what all you need to do to make it look nice again. Because it looked pretty grungy having been in the embalming room for all those years. So he did that. And when he got the clock back, it looked beautiful. And so he hung it up in the main part of the funeral home so that it was one of the first things you meet as you walked in the door. And a lot of people always commented on how pretty that clock was. And that was just my dad's clock. That was his special thing from all the years in the funeral business. He loved that clock. So at the age of 24, they sold the funeral home. They had a chance to sell to a company that came in to make a local city bank in our area. And it gave him a chance to really earn some money, and Dad went to work for another funeral home managing that, sold ours, and so on and so forth, moved forward from there. But he kept that clock. And so all these years, that clock is hung up in their house. Runs fine, no problems with it. Of course, winds down, you got to rewind it up. And Dad used to joke and tell my mom, if I die before you and you don't keep my clock wound, I'm going to come back and haunt you. So just a few months after Dad died, we met for a family dinner. And I heard my mom in the kitchen saying, yeah, right, guys, cute. And we kind of looked at each other, all three of us kids kind of looked at each other. We walked up and said, what are you talking about, Mom? And she said, leaving the face of the clock open, she said, what are you trying to do, make me think your dad's haunting me? And we looked at her and we're like, what are you talking about? And she said, I forgot to wind the clock yesterday. She said, it ran down. She said, I just came out here and found the face of the clock open. And we looked at each other and we said, Mom, we've been in the other room. We didn't open the face of your clock. And she never really believed us. She always thought that one of us had done that, and that we just were not accepting accountability for it and letting her think that Dad had come back and opened the door, you know, haunting her as he had teased her about doing. So then a couple months later, when nobody was with her, each of us get a phone call that night. And she said, I just want to ask you guys, if you really didn't open the face door on the clock that day that I thought you did. And we're like, no, Mom, you know, each one of us, no, Mom, we did not do that. And she said, well, that I didn't wind the clock yesterday where it ran down. And when I got up this morning and came out of the bedroom and walked into the kitchen, she said, the face door was open again. And she said, there wasn't anybody else around that could have done that. She said, when I went to bed, it was closed, because the reason you would know it was closed is because when you go through the area for that path to go from the kitchen to the bedroom, or even the kitchen to the bathroom, where that clock hangs, it's kind of a narrow path. So if that face door is open, you would walk into it with your head. So it wasn't open the night before, but it was open in the morning. And so she said, I think your father is sending me a message to wind his clock. And we've all kind of teased her about it now. Make sure you wind the clock, Mom, before Dad opens the door to remind you. So it has never happened since the second time. But then again, she's pretty alert and good now at checking to make sure that clock is wound and running every day. First thing in the morning, she checks the clock now. So, and we're all in the habit of checking the clock when we get to the house. Whenever we get there, that's kind of the first thing we do is check the clock. So that was kind of humorous, we all thought, and we just finally figured it was Dad coming back to tell her, wind my clock. Now, my second story of this was, 2 years ago, on New Year's Eve, 2012, my uncle passed away. And he was very elderly. I think he was 89 or 90 when he passed away. Anyways, he is my mom's oldest sibling. There's six siblings in that family, and he's the only one still to have passed away, but he was the oldest and he did pass away. Now, when I say there were six siblings in that family, only two of them, being my uncle and my mother, remained in our hometown. After they grew up and graduated from high school and college, they did not leave the area as the other four had. So my uncle married my aunt, and they had two daughters. One is four years older than me. The other is a year older than me. So we grew up very close, the three of us girls. We grew up very close, doing everything together. We played music together. We still do. We rode horses together. We did everything together. So when my uncle passed away, my cousin, that's a year older than me, cousin, she took it very, very hard. She was very close to her dad. He had been in a nursing home for the past 7 years before he died, and she went up every night, took care of things, got him ready for bed, fed him dinner, you know, just a very, very, very good and devoted daughter. And so during the calling hours and during the funeral, of course, she was very emotional, and, you know, we were just holding each other for comfort. And then after his funeral, we went back to their house for a family dinner and just, you know, meet, greet, discuss, talk, you know, share stories, the whole things you usually do after a funeral. And she kept just, she was a little aloof and a little distant. And I finally said, Kim, I said, what's wrong? I said, I know that you're very emotional and very upset about your dad's passing. But I said, there's something more here going on. I could just tell, I could feel it. And being as close as we were. So she said, I keep looking for my special moment, and nothing seems to be happening. She said, everybody's had a special moment when somebody very close and near and dear to them has died. She said, I don't seem to be getting my special moment. And she kept saying, I need my special moment. I miss my dad so bad. I need my special moment. And so I said, well, you know, they come to you when you least expect it. I said, don't be watching for it, and it will come to you. I said, if he's able to send you any kind of a greeting to let you know that he's okay, I said, he will. You know, he loved you dearly. He was your dad. He will. So a little bit later, probably about an hour later, it was a little after 4 o'clock, we're all sitting on the couch, and my cousin's sitting in the chair beside the couch, and on the couch is myself and my youngest brother and several other family members. That side of the family, that my mom's side of the family, is a very, very large family. So there was quite a few people in the living room. And on the wall across from where we were sitting is their family portrait, you know, them with their dad and their mom and both of the daughters. And it hangs up alongside of the fireplace, which was not in use. So all of a sudden, while we're talking, my brother says, hey, look over at your family portrait, at the picture with your dad. He says, look how the sunlight is highlighting your dad. And we all looked over there, and here a ray of sunshine coming through the window was making just a perfectly round silhouette around their dad, my uncle. The only person in that whole picture to be in the center of that ray of sunshine was their dad. Nobody else. Everybody else was in the shadows, but just her dad. And I looked over and squeezed her hand, and I said, here's your special moment, Kim. And she just started to cry. She says, he always said that a ray of sunshine will make for a happy day. And I said, there you go. He's brought you his ray of sunshine, and he's having a happy day. He's no longer suffering. He's pain-free. He's happy, and he's in heaven. And she just remembers that now very, very vividly to this day, that, you know, that was her special moment. So I wanted to share those two moments with you, and just kind of say, you know, our family members may come back to haunt us, so to speak, but sometimes they just do it to touch our hearts too when we need that special time in our lives. Because sometimes it's very tough to get through the day, and it's just very, very caring to us to hear a pick-me-up message or a special message just from somebody that we've loved, cherished, and missed. So on that note, have a very, very nice day, and I will talk to you another time. Bye.
That was nice to have a couple of happier little, mm-hmm. you know, hello from the other side stories.
Yeah. It's good to hear those sometimes.
Yeah, the clock one, I could see you doing that. You better do this or I'm going to haunt you. And me being afraid, I would do it every day.
I'm going to haunt you regardless. There's nothing you can do to stop it.
Okay.
Unless you die before me. That's about the only way that this will not occur. So there you go.
I liked your stories.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was really good. You know, to degrade the stories by any means, but you never hear of, maybe you do, maybe I'm just completely not thinking it's here, but you never hear of stories of the people that have passed on, if they're not in such a good place, coming back and saying something. You know, the opposite there in that case would have been, oh, it's a ray of sunshine, but it like burned through the photo or something. You know, something horrible.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not in any way implying that story. I'm just saying in general, we never, or maybe we do. Maybe there's some of those dark things are that. It's just, it's not as clear cut of like, hey, I'm okay, because I guess if you're not in such a great place, you're not going to come back. Hey, I'm rotting over here in hell, just like all my friends said they wanted me to, something behind my back.
I have no idea, you know, being that there are so many different types of ghosts.
Sure.
Like, I have no idea what shadow people mean. What does that
mean? You're right. I mean, so. It really could, you know, It'd be interesting if there's any stories like that out there anyone has of a loved one coming back to communicate as a warning, like, hey, get your shit together, otherwise you're going to go where I went.
Sure.
You know, or do you not? Do they not have the opportunity to come back and relay that message?
They can't come back. Maybe it's just the ones that are stuck in limbo, or the ones that have gone on to a better place that can come back.
Sure. 855-853-4802 is our number. Kenny writes in, hey guys, here's my story. When I was 12 or 13 and moved into a house along with my mother, sister, and stepfather, I really liked this home, but after a while I would start feeling strange while in the bathroom. We had two bathrooms. One was downstairs and the other upstairs. The stairs were only four steps and the bathrooms weren't far from each other. The one downstairs was only a sink and a toilet, and the other was a full bathroom. Apparently the man who lived there before us couldn't walk, so they built a small bathroom downstairs. Up the stairs it turned into a small hallway. On the right was immediately the bathroom, and then on the left my bedroom. Almost directly across from the bathroom, at the end of the hall, was my sister's bedroom. Across from hers was my mom and stepdad's bedroom, so there's the imagery of what that part of the house looked like. And walking out of my bedroom and downstairs, I would have to pass the bathroom, and almost every time I did, I think that someone was in there, or was just in there, and had walked down the stairs like my sister. Never really thought about it as I walked by, just had a feeling as though I thought that the room had energy in there. Then when I would get downstairs, and of course no one had been in there, sometimes I would go into the bathroom without needing to be in there just to see if I was really scared and stand in front of the sink and play with the mirror. It was a three-part mirror, and the sides of the mirror could swivel out so you could look at the angles of your face. After a while, I'd feel such heaviness in there that I would run out. I'd use the downstairs bathroom, but my mom would tell me not to use it because the toilet kept breaking and she somehow locked that bathroom, and I don't know how to unlock it. It may have not been her locking it at all, but I still refused to use the other one until it was time for a shower. I had to talk myself into taking a shower every morning and do it as fast as possible. I always felt like there was something in the corner staring at me, and even looked darker in that corner. On a few occasions, I thought I heard someone speak in that same area. I never would sleep with my bedroom door closed, but in that house I did. I feared that whatever was in that bathroom would come into my bedroom before anywhere else. Whenever I'd get home from school and no one else was home, I'd wait outside until they did. Sometimes it was 1 or 2 hours. As terrified as I was at this bathroom, I chalked it up to being my imagination. Just told myself that it was just me, imagining the entity in the bathroom, and had never told my family about it until we had moved out 2 years later. I told my mom about my feelings, and she said to me, okay, I never told you girls about this because I didn't want to scare you. She then began to tell me that one day, while she was home alone, she was taking a bath and heard someone whistling the same tune over and over. At first she was confused, but as it continued she realized that it was coming from inside the bathroom with her. Just before we moved out, she was working at the town's only gas station when a man had requested some cigarettes. My mom asked him for his ID. Upon inspecting it, she saw that it had our address. She said, oh, you used to live in that house. I'm renting it now. He said, oh yeah, I need to update my license. That was a long time ago. And he started towards the door. Then he stopped and said to my mom, okay, I have to ask. Have you had anything strange happen to you while you were in the bathroom? My mom got very intrigued and said, yes, why, what happened? The man said, oh, no, I can't talk about it. My mom asked him again to please tell her, but he refused and then left. Whatever happened to him either made him too afraid to speak out about it or didn't want to scare our family because we still lived there. I asked my mom what his name was, but she couldn't remember him. And she never saw him again, even though we lived in the same town almost a decade longer. We moved about a block away after 2 years of living there and drove past that house many times but never saw one family live there for more than 2 months. It's a mystery to this day. So just because you think you're imagining something doesn't mean it's not there. You don't have to see it to know something is there either. Thank you so much for reading my story. I have many more if you ever want to hear them. You have a great show and it's a great place for people to come when they think no one will believe them. Thank you so much. I'll continue to tune in. And yes, we would like to hear more of your stories.
I so would want to know what the guy in the gas station knew about that.
I know. I would chase him down.
I know. I'd be like, you have to tell me. I don't know how much longer I could have lived in that place. Yeah. But that's one of those things that would just gnaw at me forever.
If you're not going to tell what happened,
then
don't bring it up.
No, don't allude to you knowing something.
Exactly. I mean, it could have been like, oh, you know, something happened there? You know what happened there, right? No. Oh, okay. Well, have a good day. Bye-bye.
You just don't do that.
No, you don't do that. Oh, that's creepy. 855-853-4802 is the phone number to call in here. It's your Real Ghost Stories Online to share your story with us. Let's go to the caller. Hi.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Jenny. I had the weirdest thing happen to me just recently, about an hour ago. I work overnight at a building that has been used for multiple things, and I don't know exact history of it, but it is the corporate building. And since I worked overnight, you know, just like, it's creepy in itself because there's really no one here. So what happened was I went to the bathroom and there was no one there. It has the light sensors where if no one's been in there for so many minutes, like, it turns off. So when I came in, the lights turned off. They turned on because the sensor detected me. So I knew that there was no one in there for a while. And the paper towel dispensers that we have are automatic, the ones where you have to, like, wave your hand in front of them to get the paper towel out. So I go into the bathroom stall, lock the door, sit down, do what I gotta do, and all of a sudden the towel thing goes off. And I was like, well, that's weird. Like, you know, usually when someone comes in, you can hear the door. It's so distinct that it makes a creaking noise. And it has a latch on it, so when you open the door and it closes, it latches, so I would have heard someone come in. And then when I was washing my hands, I didn't use that machine that went off. I could have sworn I saw what seemed to be a girl in a green shirt kind of dart towards the stalls in the hallway. And the bathroom, the way it's set up, it's about a 10-foot hallway, and then on the right side, when you first come in, are the sinks, and then to the left is all the stalls. And so it was back in the corner, and it so happened to be in the back of that corner, there was a couple lights out, so it was kind of dark. So I don't know if maybe because I'm so tired and it's like overnights that I was freaked out, but I thought that was weird. So I just want to share that with you guys, and I hope it goes on the show. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, my personal opinion, if you saw something clear enough to tell us what color, then I think you saw something.
Yeah, I think that pretty much narrows it down. It's paranormal bathroom day here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
It sure is, isn't it?
It's funny how that works sometimes, where the calls will end up kind of playing along with some of the stories that we've selected to share. And the stories are lined up, but the calls are not so much, other than let's get some calls on the air.
Right.
And we don't really know what's going to be in them until we start playing them back. But lots of coincidences on this show. When we talk about a topic, it all seems to go. There was one with the theme parks not long ago where
there's
multiple theme park stories. I don't know why that is, but it's always happened. See, before you got on the show.
Yeah.
I would notice that.
And we do not coordinate that at all. And I don't do a themed show for the stories.
If we were to do a themed show, we would tell you at the beginning.
Right.
We'd be like, hey, today we're going to talk about this. But it's interesting how that that works. Nonetheless, lots of strange things that happen inside bathrooms. All the more reason that I'm cautious of them in the middle of the night. And I don't look into the mirrors. So there you go. That's our show for today. My voice somewhat survived.
You made it. I do have to say, with the power of Google, I did find that camp does exist.
Okay.
But I did not find anything about the legend of Hannah McGonagall.
Interesting.
But that doesn't mean I'm going to stop looking.
I'm sure it's out there.
I'm like that. Yeah. I like to dig for things.
And if anyone else wants to dig too and share all of our findings up on that message board, that would be...
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. A little resource on that haunting right there. So if you've not done so yet, please become an EPP. If you like the show, support the show. That's what keeps it going. Without your support, without our EPPs, the show would not be continuing on. So it's only $5 a month. You get a bonus episode every single week, and you get access to all those bonus episodes as well as video content and stuff. And it's just a nice way to keep our show alive. So if you got $5 a month to spare, please throw it in the kitty and help us go. You can sign up on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. So until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Have a good night. I'm going to go have some more tea. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.